It is 2:02.
Okay. Then you call my wife, and then it's with the Boat Rights Act of 65.
From Selma Montgomery March.
You had all that met.
Yeah, I did a report on civil rights last semester.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, up until this time, the Southern Democrats, or many of them, not all of them, but a majority of them, were kind of ideologically akin to Republicans. They'd vote like Republicans did. He called that in political science the conservative coalition. They'd vote like that on economic matters, on socialist civil rights, they're just like Republicans. Now in 65, the Southern Democrats basically, with such a huge number of blacks being added to the electorate, basically became, after 65, became a civil rights liberal. He became basically just like his Northern Democrat brethren on civil rights issues, so you couldn't tell much difference there on civil rights issues between Teddy Kennedy and even John Stennis in Mississippi, because they depended so much on the black vote to keep them in office. And it's got now, you know, where you can't win a Democrat primary in Alabama without the support of the blacks. So Democrats in Alabama, you know, maybe even holler louder though for civil rights than Democrats in Massachusetts do.
It's
a big change.
How do you feel that politicians talk about blacks behind closed doors when they're not the ones that are going to get elected? It doesn't seem like they would necessarily be all gung-ho about getting elected by blacks, or the fact that they would even have them as constituents, but the fact they have to get voted in by them might dismay them. So how do they talk about it in private?
Well, just like my daddy said back all those years ago, if you were black, you'd be out on the front vanguard of the movement yourself. So I think everybody understands where the folks are coming from. Sometimes, just like with any interest group pushes as far as they can push, and they want probably as much as they can get. You kind of have to, regardless what interest group is, hold them in line. And I was a politician myself, the Elba State Board of Education. You end up cussing them all, you know, because they want you to do things that you can't possibly do. Mm-hmm. But the goodwill is still there. So the idea of if you really feel like you're a public servant, it just depends on what you have, how you perceive your role. But if you really feel like that your job is to represent your people and make their life better, I don't know of anybody there that just could cut out a, you know, between a fourth and a third of the people of Alabama and tell them to drop dead. I don't believe that most politicians down here want to do that either, even behind closed doors. I don't believe that. I believe that politics is a compromising of interests. As long as folks are willing to compromise their interests for the good or betterment of the whole, then that's wonderful. Everybody can improve all along. You can't let anybody, though, push too hard at the expense of the other interests involved. That's the time, really, where you kind of lose and get irritated. But the black interests are getting to understand that more and more, that you've got to moderate your demand. You can't have everything in 2 years, you see.
Yeah,
that doesn't work that way.
Even though that's what's interesting
for anybody.
Yeah. Is that even if sweeping legislation, say, for the blacks during the 60s, in the early 60s, would have been the best thing in order to curb everything, that kind of social change, it just takes
it won't
it
work.
Uproots the entire
it
system.
Will not
it's
work.
Too radical.
That's right.
So we
so
have
as long
to
as everybody is very understanding, you see, and willing to work together and compromise, like politics is, it is a compromise by definition, then really
I think everybody can accommodate everybody.
Okay.
And I think people want to do that. Sometimes, you know, you get to be antagonists because people with demands are too great, and sometimes they just completely opposite, just can't. But I think, you know, the blacks are now getting leaders there that are much more aware of how things have to be. And you can't get everything, and even if you could, just as well. But there's very much accommodation with black establishment in politics and whatnot. They're very well brought in, and they have access, great amount of access here.
It seems. It's hard to say. The whole racial issues, as far as say employment or what is it, discrimination policies, this and that, comes to.
I'm not sure.
Because those,
maybe so.
I'm not saying for politics, but in general, I know that myself, being a white male, I couldn't go to college for almost 2 years to an away school, a 4-year institution, because I couldn't afford it. But I know a black guy who was stupider than me, and he can go to school and he'll get paid full ride, get a financial aid check larger than the amount of money that I made all last year.
It's popular at all now here. This reverse discrimination is not. Nobody preaches that openly, and I'm not sure.
Well, there's revelation of it in California.
How much is practiced here?
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's one certainly area not of politics in the state of Alabama, that's for sure.
Uh-huh. That's just one area that's always bothered me, is that I understand that everybody's got a special
but
cause.
But that's what you've got to do. You know, it's a compromise. It's always been a compromise. That's just basic. I don't know. And they talk about legislating feelings and attitudes. You can legislate. The Civil Rights Bill, starting in 57, going on through 77, and 82, I guess, is the last one that passed. They've changed attitudes. They've created generations that feel differently about the two races in my generation.
Yeah.
It's changed.
And it's sometimes
and they say
it's not.
You can't legislate morals and feelings. You can. That shows it.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily that it says it, but the way you react
the
to
way
it.
You, that's exactly right.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You can't do it, too.
We're getting
there's more harmony here, basically, I think, than you find up north in many, many respects between the races.
You said similarities?
Harmony. Between the races. Than you find in many northern areas. For example, some of these northern states, they push these affirmative action policies. That makes whites angry.
Oh, it does. My dad works in a
place. Very angry. See, we don't push all that down here, and the whites don't get so angry.
Well, how many blacks, though, are in higher holding positions?
Well, they hold quite a few. But, of course, I think that was due basically a lot to the political power of the blacks. See, you don't think about it, but in some of the states, the blacks constitute about a third of the electorate. Now, you don't have to do very... You know, when you got a third of the electorate there, hey, against you, you don't have to have... You know, you don't have to have a lot of reverse discrimination here. You know immediately there, if you're in politics, you're going to have to do everything you can to accommodate these people and find places there for them and make them a member of your team, give them a job. If you get elected governor, appoint them to find cabinet jobs. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's a law. It's just the political survival that you have to do. That's right.
Okay. God, my whole thing seems kind of like... I have a question like, what elements of the Lost Cause do you feel are still prevalent? Lost Cause, do you feel it was important to keep or discard? That kind of thing. That
kind of the flag and stuff like that.
Just the whole idea of the great glorious Southerner marching into battle against the Union troops. It wasn't about slavery, it was about, you know, states' rights. You had to keep everything. Like, about that whole deal, basically it was like an excuse in textbooks for a long time. How much of that do you think is left or should be left? Because I think, in ways, okay, Bob James wants to fly the state, the Confederate flag, isn't it, where over the state building or something like that, and it's a big problem. I don't see there's a problem with it, and I'm totally like,
most folks could care less. If they want to fly it, that's wonderful. If they don't want to fly it, that's wonderful too. Most folks think there are other issues that are more important than the Confederate flag.
But then there's the nitpicky people who like...
Well, yes, they're always nitpicky people, but they're certainly a vast minority.
Okay.
You know, well, I love Pelham. I love to read about Southern history. I don't even wish the South had won the war. I bet if you took a vote down there, probably be no, none, because they realize the consequences of it. It would have perpetuated there an elitist, aristocratic, you know, rich man's regime, and folks there, they might understand that a little bit better, you see, than they used to.
It's really good.
I'm not saying everybody does, but a lot of folks there do understand.
Anybody who wants it. But then it comes in with education.
Well, sure.
You're educated about it.
You understand that. Hey, yeah. There's a light bulb turned on in my head.
Otherwise.
Well, even though the Southern, you know, when these secession conventions, you had big, well, you, opposition, big minority opposition to secession. You've studied that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks said, hey, we ain't going to fight for these plantations. Well, that's ridiculous. And the longer there that this has evolved and been around, you know, the idea, hey, Confederacy, well, that's part of the history. But so what? I got to put food on the table. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Things fly or not. Nobody except for the, what is it, UDC, United Daughters of the Confederacy. They don't know what to care.
I have one more question then.
All right.
And then I want you to give me a summary real quick on who you think is going to win the election on the Republican side, as far as the, who's going to be running on the Republican side and why. Here's the last question. I hear a lot in Professor Jackson's class and done research on politics, and it seems that the ones that have done the best in the elections are the ones that promise to keep out certain things and not give in to others. Through the 1960s and 70s, do you feel in the 80s and or in the 80s and 90s, do you feel this remained true? If so, does that leave the South as a seeming separate entity among the nation?
No, that's not true.
Okay. Then
we're becoming more and more and more like everybody else. We want the Japanese investment, even if
some people don't. I don't want it personally.
Well, I mean, you take a vote here. Pat Buchanan, he can't even win Georgia over there. The idea is what? Money's more important than anything.
Well, doesn't that kind of conflict with all the religion?
Well,
with money? This is where I get real tied up, because...
Well, it's the truth, though. It's, you know, the almighty dollar. He who makes the gold, has the gold, makes the rule. That's the golden rule. Just that simple.
Maybe I'm just a...
Well, no, you're romantic.
In a way.
That's the way it is. I am too. But I look at reality and see what's happening.
Uh-huh. Well, Georgia, in effect, is almost... To me, I don't know. I haven't been in any backhill countries of Georgia. I have a couple friends from LaGrange, some small counties and stuff that I know from the dorm and everything. And they're not quite up to date with some stuff. But Georgia, as a whole, is almost like a northern state. Their education system
is fantastic.
Well,
sure they are. We're just like... we're getting more and more like Georgia and then getting more like everybody else.
Uh-huh.
That's the way it is. We're a little behind, but we're moving that way.
I almost hope you wouldn't.
I would too, in a way.
There's a definite, can't really say it in any other words, but when I was at home for Christmas, I never felt more rushed than I did.
Well,
I run
I
around a lot,
it.
You know?
It's moving too fast. That's why God lets us die.
Uh-huh.
We won't fit in.
It's crazy. Well, I guess you have
That's what's happening. That's what's happening. We get to this October.
So you don't think Buchanan's going to win?
No.
I hope Dole doesn't win. I think he's
stupid. He's bold.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they're right. He has no vision for America. He doesn't have anywhere that he wants us to be 20 years from now, 10 years from now. But all he talks about is, hey, the polls say so-and-so. I carried 5 states today. Or I can beat the cannon up, you know. What are you going to do, baby, for America? It's not that.
So Clinton's going to end up winning, probably.
Well, it looks like it to me.
I think Clinton...
Clinton's got a lot... He's got clay feet. He's got a lot of places that he can just completely collapse. You know, I think, in a way, I was listening to the Nightline last night. This Whitewater is far from over.
Uh-huh.
That thing could blow up in their both their faces, you know.
They're probably waiting until...
They're going to wait a little while longer and just set them on fire. But, I mean, you know, it's easy to sit back here there and say Clinton can win, but, ooh, it's too early to say that. I don't see how Dole could win, but, you know, stranger things, I guess, have happened. Dole doesn't deserve to win.
I don't think any... I don't think any politicians that are running in this presidential race I have any kind of compassion for.
Well, I don't either. I haven't found one. I used to thought I'd like Steve Forbes. But I think basically, you know, that he has got a one-note campaign, and basically, you know, every other issue than economics, he's totally unprepared. So anyway.
Well,
and I don't much like him. I don't trust my teaching that to somebody who doesn't know what it is like to make $35,000 a year.
Although, when you talk about maybe Perot being elected, okay, well, nobody, this is what I have to tell everybody. Before I came down here this summer, my parents didn't want me to live at home anymore. I lived there too long. They said I paid rent even or whatever, but they didn't want me to live at home anymore. After a certain time, they had plans for the house they moved into. They were going to make an office for my dad. He was going to start his own business again. I had to live in an apartment. $85 a week I paid. It was a room. I didn't have a bathroom. I didn't have a kitchen. All I had was a little fridge, okay, and my coffee maker. There were stains all over the carpet. The walls were green. And I had ants sometimes, you know, that I'd see crawling. I had to start there. I had to start at the bottom, okay? Now, I know that at some point in my life I'm going to be escalated, you know, and I'll be at some pinnacle or what have
you. You're too small.
Okay, well, just...
I mean that. But go on.
All right, thank you. In America, though, what nobody understands is you have to suffer before you can make gains. And when politicians come in and they say, oh, this is all fine and dandy, we can fix it by this... sooner or later, there's going to have to be a big chunk out of everybody taken before this place gets better, because it's going downhill.
And it is.
Yeah.
They're taking it regardless. See, they're taking it regardless. I voted for Perot.
Mm-hmm.
I like Perot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most folks down here don't like Perot.
Mm-hmm.
Perot did probably worse in the South than he did anywhere else.
Uh-huh, you're right.
And they just, for some reason, don't...
He pays taxes on $33,000 a year. I mean, how much money does the guy have? He doesn't pay any taxes. He's obviously brilliant.
Just don't like him. But I'm kind of like you. You know, we're going to have to bite the bullet sometime soon. But, you know, politicians are always good at making us bite the bullet. And we don't bear it. We can't deal with a pinch. They are working right now. George Wallace was the best at hiding taxes. He would tax, but the rates wouldn't go up. But he would joke, my goodness alive, he'd put a fishing license on, and then he'd put this kind of fee on and raise this thing. I never raised a tax in my life. Well, you know, your taxes, no, they're a fee. So now these boys in Washington, you know, they let it get out of hand, you see, but basically, you know, they're going to, they're crunching down now. So, I don't think the rhetoric basically determines the policy that much. I think, you know, that basically the folks that keep the system running up there, you know, out of the earshot of all this talk, they basically
going to keep it running about the same regardless of what's said. Voted on in the election, kind of like I was reading a book on foreign policy. They said it really makes no difference who wins the presidency or foreign policy is going to be concerned, because this whoever wins got so many constraints on it, so many already sunk or decided factors, so much is already, you know, beyond his control. Clinton or Dole, basically make the same decision. I think that's almost true as far as the economic questions are concerned. It really doesn't make very much difference in a way, because the system is going to work itself out pretty well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But anyway.
Hey, I really